No, it's Just Plain Radio.
Yeah.
The show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
I can fly. Take me to the pilot, lead me to the tamer.
Take me to the pilot. Brought to you by JustPlaneRadio.com.
It's your lucky day.
Your aviation resource on the information super skyway.
You got a plane.
Call Just Plane Radio toll-free now at 888-884-2FLY.
And the sky's the limit.
That's 888-884-2359.
Sir, I'd like you to take the helm, please.
I'd be glad to. Greg, your co-pilot, that's me, along with Captain Ed and Captain Keith. We are your crew today for Just Plane Radio, the show devoted to the aviation lifestyle and learning to fly. You know, we got a full crew. That's kind of nice. And no dogs in the studio flying airplanes. So, you know, it's 50-50 whether we get back to our home port today, I guess. Is that true, Keith?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's anybody's guess.
Of course, I'm the only dog here, so.
Okay. All right. I don't even know what to say to that. Do you, Ed?
I try to ignore him as much as possible.
Okay.
Which is kind of hard. We're sitting in the same office now.
It is. You guys are together, and, you know, here you are together here, too. It's like you're almost getting along, which is strange.
Almost getting along.
Yeah. That's what the box of dog treats are for, Ed?
How I keep him in line.
That explains a lot. All right. Well, we have
hollow legs I got to fill somehow or another.
Okay. Yeah. We do have a full crew, but that's never enough. So we brought in some big guns. Tom Haynes from AOPA is back in the United States and on Just Plane Radio right now. How are you, Tom? And welcome home, kind of.
Hello, guys. Boy, it's good to be back on U.S. soil, I can tell you that, particularly think about from an aviation standpoint.
Yes, let's talk. Well, we'll have to work back in time here because you've been traveling all over since the last time we spoke. And you are back on U.S. soil fresh. From Havana.
Ooh,
that's
cool.
Right.
Yeah. So you were flying.
Now I'm the only one that hasn't been to Cuba.
That's
this
right.
is true. Yeah, you feel left out.
No, if really.
You would you like a Cuban cigar? I do have some left over from my last trip.
Maybe.
Okay. I'd love to see.
He can't have one of those. He doesn't have a passport.
True. I think that's, how many did you bring back?
I knew that would come up.
Tom, I'm sure you got a full stash. You're up to your...
Right. You know, customs says you can bring $100 of cigars or rum, you know, combination of cigars and rum. And
right.
We may have maxed that out.
Yeah, you may have. Yes. You know, you can... I mean, it's like a buck a cigar in Cuba, so you can get a lot of them. At least that's what you tell them. I don't know what you tell them. I mean, how do they know how much they cost? Right, Tom? Or we'll leave that off the air? Or I said too much already.
Something like that.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's talk about this. So you went down there with Mark Baker, and did I get this right? You actually flew over on his float plane from Key West over to Cuba last week?
We did. We did. We arrived on a general aviation airplane, Mark's caravan on floats,
nice.
Into Havana, and we were there sort of kind of on as emissaries, really, on behalf of all of general aviation, trying to work with the Cuban authorities to help them understand what it takes to welcome general aviation airplanes en masse and provide the infrastructure and also to reassure them about safety, which they're pretty concerned about.
Mm. They are concerned with it, is that what you're saying? They are concerned with safety? Really?
Yeah, I mean, they're very safety conscious.
Wait, hold on.
Of course.
Well, last time I was in Cuba, it was 50-50 whether or not the bathrooms would have a toilet seat in the stall. And you're telling me they're worried about safety? That is a hazard. That every American, I think...
How is that a safety to aviation?
Well, it's a safety issue, period. I mean, it's kind of disgusting on another side. But regardless...
It's the cracked toilet seats that are the really safety problem.
Yeah, emphasis on crack. Anyway, so, you know, they are concerned about what? Planes coming over to Cuba and not knowing what they're doing? Or what kind of vibe were you getting from
them? Right. People not understanding the procedures and requirements that they have for general aviation, just kind of blundering in.
Yeah.
And also mixing up general aviation airplanes with airliners and military traffic, because basically they have zero general aviation aircraft now, except for a few ag planes and a couple of microlights, literally on the whole island.
Right.
And so the idea of general aviation airplanes landing in the same vicinity as an airliner, it kind of freaks them out.
Mm-hmm.
They have no experience with that. So we were there to try to reassure them it can be done, demonstrate for them how it's done in the United States. We invited them over to tour some airports with us to understand how it is that they manage air traffic and blend different types of aircraft together all safely. And so hopefully that'll work out well.
Yeah. Well, how many? How big a group are we talking? I mean, you and Mark went over with a contingency of who and how many.
There were five of us on board.
Okay, and then you went and met with the Cubanos over there, and how many did you hang? You know, there was Fidel and Raul and who?
Right. Oh. Yeah. We had meetings with all of the above. Sure, we did.
But I mean, is there like an aviation group over there that you kind of hobnobbed with?
Yeah. They have an equivalent of the FAA, it's got several thousand employees that work for their equivalent of the FAA. The regulations are mirrored after many Latin American countries, which are basically mirrored after the FAA regulations. Mm-hmm. So Part 91, 135, 121, all the regulations we're used to, they've got all that. And
on the upside, you know, nothing has changed in Cuba since 1950, and that includes the FAA and here in the States, right? So
they should get along just fine.
No, I mean, what were the biggest challenges other than they were concerned about, obviously, you know, the conflict with commercial airliners and military craft in Cuba?
Right.
What do you think?
Well, it's the process. They're very into process. And it's mind-numbing to us. I mean, I just got back from Europe and faced the same thing when we were trying to fly general aviation in Europe, and particularly in Egypt. I mean, it's just they have these rules and regulations regarding, you know, you must fill out this form. Where all this paperwork goes, I have no idea. Hmm. But all these paper forms that you have to fill out, filing a flight plan, getting a routing is a big deal. You know, we file a flight plan. We have a sense of what the routing is going to be. And if it's not what we expect, you know, we just kind of deal with it. And you go fly anyhow, not over there. You know, whatever you submit as a flight plan, if that routing isn't acceptable, it just gets kicked back to you, and you know, they go, you know, basically try again without any guidance on, you know, what might be the correct route. Hmm. And so it's we were all over that airport at Havana trying to pay different fees in different places, fill out this, get that stamped, sign here, and literally driving all over the airport to just get one flight process. So we've talked to them about how they need to streamline the process, simplify the process, and just make it a lot easier for pilots. And they understand. They get it. They were very welcoming of the information and the guidance we were trying to provide them.
Yeah. And I mean, as far as preparing for this flight over, I mean, what kind of flight plan did you have to do? Was that no different than what Keith would do back in the day when he had a charter from, you know, South Florida to Cuba on a business jet or what?
Yeah, it's not that difficult. You do have to apply for a landing permit number, and then you put that on the flight plan. You file an international flight plan, and with that landing permit number, then Miami Center will just hand you off to Havana, and away you go. And so that's pretty easy. You do need to get a visa. It's easiest to get that in advance, although I've heard you can actually get them on the spot, and we saw a guy with a camera there at a visa station, so I think you'd get them on the spot. And but it's easiest to do with a handler at this point, you know, a company that specializes in helping get you through the process. We're told it can be done as an individual, but even the authorities down there are saying, you know, best guidance is to use a handler. But even then, it took us about 90 minutes. Once we arrived, it was about 90 minutes of processing to get the five of us in the airplane, you know, legally into the country. Same thing on the way out. It was about another 90 minutes of running around the airport, getting stuff signed and filled out before we could depart. So it needs to get better. But there are a lot of Americans there. We had dinner while we were over there one night with a group of the Twin Cessna group. Mm, they had 27 airplanes there and more than 80 people.
Wow. Wow.
So there's Americans coming and going, but you have to do it currently under one of the 12 licenses that the Department of Justice has set up. And one of them is people-to-people, which is what the Twin Cessna folks were there. We were there under the guise of professional research and professional meetings, since we were meeting with the authorities. Mm-hmm. But you can't just go as a tourist. Tourism is a bad word for the U.S. government. The Cubans don't care.
Yeah.
But the U.S. government doesn't allow tourism yet in Cuba. You have to go under one of these 12 licenses. But that'll come. It's happening.
I agree. When I was down there, you know, those 12 categories are pretty broad. I mean, the people to people is basically if you know somebody and they know somebody, it's ridiculous, really. And when we came back through customs, it was a joke. I mean, they didn't ask me anything when I came back through. What was your experience coming back through customs? Did you feel
into the U.S.?
Yeah. Did you get any?
Yeah, same thing. No, yeah. We came back into Key West, and it was like no big deal at all. It was actually easier than coming back from the Bahamas.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to say. Last week, I was in the Bahamas, and I had way more trouble flying back and forth from the Bahamas than I did Cuba a couple months ago. So, go figure. They've made it pretty easy. And, yeah, there's some rules and basic regulations you got to follow, but it's not too difficult to do so. But as far as, I'll tell you what, we got to take a quick break, but I want to follow this whole flight plan through Cuba that you did, because you flew from Key West into Havana, and then you had a route that you did, and we'll talk about that and how much fun it was with our guest Tom Haines from AOPA Live. Next, right here on Just Plane Radio. Just getting started. You guys want to go or what?
Oh, I'll go.
Yeah? Keith?
I'm ready.
All right, grab the cigars. I got the rum. Oh, hey, grab that toilet seat.
Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle. Imagine traveling twice as fast as you can drive. Imagine taking friends and family snorkeling, surfing, skiing, shopping, and more to exotic destinations. Imagine attending business meetings in cities far away and still making it home at night. Or just imagine exploring the wild blue yonder. Quit dreaming about it and get to it. There has never been a better time to become a private pilot, and flight training professionals in Orlando will show you how. Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is your full-service flight school. A state-of-the-art flight simulator, a fleet of the latest Cessna aircraft, and a staff of full-time seasoned flight instructors are just a few of the many reasons Flight Training Professionals in Orlando is the place to start your aviation adventure. Call 407-896-0077. That's 407-896-0077. Or go to ftpros.com. That's ftpros.com.
Whether you're a flight student, an experienced pilot, or simply an aviation enthusiast, there is a place for you as a member of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. Join AOPA to get the latest general aviation news, safety resources, and technical support you need to sharpen your skills and become a central part of the nation's vibrant general aviation community. Learn more about becoming a member at AOPA.org. That's AOPA.org.
As pilots, it's all about the journey. But sometimes situations arise that can turn an adventure into a nightmare. Do what divers do. Join DAN, Divers Alert Network. The many benefits of a DAN membership go way beyond water activities. As a DAN member, you automatically receive DAN Travel Assist and up to $100,000 of evacuation assistance coverage. This applies to both diving and non-diving medical emergencies. Dive into DAN.org for details. DAN, your Dive Safety Association.
With Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
About this time, someone is telling you to get on the plane. Get on the plane, get on the plane. I say, you, I'm getting in the plane. In the plane. Let Evel Knievel get on the plane. I'll be in here with you folks in uniform.
I be flying high, yeah, I be flying high. Shawty, I be flying high. Yeah, I be flying high, shawty, I be flying high. It take long to get this fly. If you ain't up on my level, disappear, please don't reply. Bye.
Word. Yeah, this is Just Plane Radio. We're doing what we can to reach out to the millennial pilots here on today's show and offending everybody else. Just what we do. All right, Greg, your co-pilot, Captain Keith, Captain Ed from Flight Training Professionals, and Tom Haines from AOPA is our guest right now. He just got back from flying to Cuba. And, you know, went Key West to Havana and then pick it up from there. Where'd you go exactly, Tom?
Well, after we left Havana, we went over to the Varadero area, which is a resort that's kind of around the corner off to the east of Havana along the coast. And we flew over there. That's a commercial airport. And then we actually drove over to Kawama Airport because we drove over because there's no customs. We wanted to be able to leave later. And so we left the airplane at Varadero. But went over to Kawama, and that was really interesting because we met over there with the Aero Club of Cuba, which is this 80-year-old club that has more than 1,000 members in it, very dedicated folks, but zero airplanes.
Oh, wow.
Well, what kind of club is that? That's a strange club. That sounds like a club I could belong to. Maybe I should join up with them when I head to Cuba.
He's an associate member already.
Yeah, I think so.
Doesn't even know it.
Hey, I don't have a plane. Can I enter? Yeah, come on in.
There you go.
Amigo, we want you. All right. So, they just can't get the machines. But so they just what? Talk shop? Talk about airplanes?
Yeah, pretty much. They're enthusiasts, and they talk a lot about general aviation. There is a commercial skydiving operation at that airport. And they have, over the years, there were three float planes in the country at one point, but one of them sunk, and the rest of them are down for maintenance. And there are no general aviation, private general aviation airplanes really flying in the country. There's some ag operations. Used to be some gliders, but not really much anymore.
I'm confused. Now, wait a minute.
So
skydivers, and they have no plane? What?
Well, like I said, commercial. You know, they're flying.
They get on the airplane.
They get on
Antonov the AN-2s. You know, it's a paid operation, but private flying, not so much.
I see.
Your intro, they get on the airplane and they dive off.
Right. Evo Knievel. Yeah. Exactly. I gotcha.
I was just going to make the point that it sounds like you already belong in this group.
I know.
That's all you do on this radio show.
True.
Talk about airplanes. And
that sounds like it's
not really do much of anything.
That's the Cuban version of Just Plain Radio.
You got to love that, though. I mean, you've got over 1,000 members.
I know. The passion. And they haven't been able to do it. I think that's an excellent market. But I'm a capitalist, so I probably wouldn't fit in.
You talk to them, and do they have plans to get planes now that things are starting to loosen up for them, or they say they have no chance in hell of that happening anytime soon?
They are eternally optimistic about that. They really talk a lot about it. They're looking for a donated airplane. If they had one, they could use it. They really believe they could operate one, and within the regulations and all that. It's not that they're prohibited. It's just they don't have access.
Yeah.
So if you got a spare airplane there, Ed and Keith, there that you just aren't using much, you could just fly it over there and leave it. They'd appreciate that.
Well, I'll tell you what. The thing I saw, and maybe
which one of the 12 licenses would we go under for that?
That's a good question.
The people, I think.
Well, if you know somebody in Cuba, yeah, it's a Cuban resident, and they would be. Mm-hmm. And being that they have, you know, they're basically the, you know, the Cuban version of Just Plain Radio, hey, that's radio to radio category. So, but, you know, what about when you were cruising around the island, especially in Havana, you saw how resourceful these folks were with all these old cars that they drive around. Mm-hmm. That you think couldn't possibly still be running, and they've replaced the engines in them. And I mean, I was driving around in a 57 Pontiac that the guy had put a Mitsubishi diesel engine in and was getting 50 miles per gallon.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure they could apply some of that ingenuity to an old classic airplane and do the same, but they just haven't had that, I don't know, they haven't had that option available to them yet, because anything that flies off the island has a tendency to get shot down or sunk if it floats, something like that. I guess, maybe, or do you know?
I'm sure they worry about that.
But, yeah,
You know, part of the problem is that because of the embargo by the U.S., the ability to get parts is really restrictive. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. They probably could get some parts from other parts of the world, but if we had easy trade between the two countries, that would certainly simplify things.
Yeah. Now,
did you talk about that at all, as far as getting general aviation in there? What happens if you fly a general aviation in there and you have a mechanical? You know, who repairs it, and how do you get parts?
You call up that guy with the 57 Pontiac?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's because that, you know, that Lycoming in your Cessna is probably just like the one that was built in 1957. So
right.
they probably pretty good about that. Yeah. My guess is that they are pretty good mechanics, and they do have aviation mechanics there because, like I said, there's ag operations, and so they got guys who work on piston airplanes, and they have a lot of turbine maintenance and stuff that goes on. But really, probably what you'd do is you'd bring a mechanic over from Florida. You'd have to pay him, obviously, and get him a seat on an airliner and get him over there to fix the airplane is what you'd do.
Short flight, 90 miles from Key West.
Yep. Yep.
So, yeah, I'm sure a lot of that is available, and just a matter of how much money you got and planning accordingly. But, yeah, if you had a mechanical, I would imagine you'd be in a little bit of trouble. Have a few extra days added to your itinerary that you weren't expecting. But as far as the folks there, Did they know about AOPA too? Were they aware of what you guys do in the States and stuff, or do you know?
Yeah, there was actually. I'd been communicating with the president of the Aero Club for several months. He contacted me, reached out to me, asking and inviting us, and wanting to know more about general aviation in the United States, and curious about, you know, how it is they might be able to access an airplane, and certainly the authorities were familiar with AOPA. And the work that we do over here and the educational materials that we produce there, they were anxious to learn more about that and how we might be supportive in creating training materials for pilots to help them understand how to fly safely in Cuba. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they definitely are aware. And one of the folks who is with us is head of the IAOPA, the International Council of Aircraft Owner and Pilot Associations. And there are IAOPA, there are AOPAs in 75 countries. And they're interested in starting one over there, sort of basically the Aero Club would become an affiliate of the AOPAs. And that would help them kind of organize themselves and be more effective in advocating for freer aviation in the country.
Yeah. Now, did they like, did they check out your float plane that you guys were flying, that Grand Caravan? I bet they were pretty impressed with that piece of machinery.
Yeah, it's a big airplane sitting up on those floats, and it draws a crowd wherever it goes. And so, yeah, we had a lot of attention everywhere we went, people taking pictures with it. And they see GA airplanes over there these days, a lot more than they used to, but not many that look like that one.
Yeah, I bet. Or carrying the passenger crew that you guys had. Mark Baker, head of AOPA, and Tom Haynes, super pilot extraordinaire, who just flew and piloted the new Honda jet. So we got to talk about that. You willing to share there, Tom, next?
Yeah, I'm sure. Jealous on that one,
okay,
too.
Yeah, we'll get to that next. And all kinds of other crazy stuff. Cuba, you know, UK flying. He flew around the pyramids. He's done some nutty stuff. We're just getting started right here on Just Plane Radio.
Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
I've been up around the stratosphere at 31,000 feet. I'm gonna fly on out of here on wings that you can't see. If you're gonna fly high without fear, you're gonna have to learn to love the atmosphere. And you gotta learn to use those wings you can't see.
This is Just Plane Radio. Greg, your co-pilot. That's me, along with Captain Ed and Captain Keith from Flight Training Professionals. And Tom Haynes from AOPA is with us right now. So he's been flying through Cuba with the, you know, big kahuna there at AOPA, Mark Baker, on his Grand Caravan on floats, which, by the way, is kind of my dream plane. I mean, that was the one I had my eyes on first, and then I've kind of switched over to a Quest Kodiak, thinking it'd be easier to fly, because it needs shorter runway and takeoff space. But if it's on floats, I guess it doesn't matter. Grand Caravan would be my choice. Am I right, Tom? I'm just thinking out loud that when Tom, you know, or when Mark gets done with his plane, he can just hand it over to us. It's kind of a goodwill gesture.
Yeah. You wait right there, okay?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And don't hold your breath.
Yeah, but I would imagine you had a pretty comfortable ride over there and back from Cuba. Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great airplane. It's easy to fly, and it, you know, just carries lots of stuff. You got loads of room, you know, in the airplane itself, and then plus in the floats. You can carry a lot in the floats themselves. Oh, so it'd be great for scuba gear, I got to say. It'd serve you well.
Where's the cruise at with the floats on there?
You know, how much fuel you want to burn. I mean, most of the time, those airplanes, you know, with floats on them, don't go very high. So it's a turbine engine flying really low. So you can imagine the fuel burn is pretty high, and the speeds are pretty low. But, I mean, it's, you know, in the 150-ish range. But if you take it up high, it'll do 170 or so.
Yeah. Where did he let you fly it yourself, too, some? Or no? No way in hell.
I've flown it lots of times. I didn't fly it on this particular trip, flown it many other times.
And when you landed in Havana, did you land it on the water somewhere, or did you land on the runway with this one?
No, we landed on the runway. Mark really wanted to land on the water, but I think that was just a bridge too far for them.
did you guys fly the 15 DME ARC in there?
No, we had a visual.
Oh, okay.
Now you're talking airplane talk, aren't you?
Yeah. We just lost Greg.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Migo. But my eyes glaze over.
The IFR flight path. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
See, I got that much.
Woo-wee.
But, you know, it might as well have been Spanish.
Yeah, they would never never give us a visual approach in there. It was always fly the DME arc, intercept the ILS, and come on in.
Gracias. That's all I'd say.
Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
You are now clear for takeoff with Just Plain Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
You know that maneuver where you fly straight up until you stall and then pull out of the dive?
Uh-huh.
Can we do that today?
Nope.
Don't decide now. We'll talk when we're up.
Sky Pilot.
This is Just Plain Radio. Greg, your co-pilot. That's me along with Captain Ed and Captain Keith. And Tom Haynes from AOPA. So Cuba flying, UK flying. We'll get to that in just a bit. But I think the most recent thing in your repertoire of aviation adventures has been flying the new Honda jet. Am I right there, Tom, or what?
Yeah, I just flew that this week.
So how did this come about? Because, there's only a few of these out in the field right now. Am I right? They're just now shipping.
That's right. They've delivered, three or four, maybe five to retail customers, and then another 15 maybe to their dealers.
Okay.
This has sort of been an 11-year odyssey for me, and really the company, though, has been working on an aviation project since the 80s. They had an unusual high-winged airplane they experimented with in the 80s, and then in the 90s they built what is an airplane that what we've come to know today as the Honda Jet. They had a proof-of-concept airplane that flew just a few days before the 100th anniversary of flight in 2003. And then in 2005, they contacted me out of the blue and said, hey, we're ready to talk about this thing, because they'd been very mysterious, very quiet about it. They never really would even admit the airplane existed, even though people in Greensboro, North Carolina, where they're based, had seen it fly a little bit. But they contacted me and said, hey, we're ready to tell the world about this project. Are you interested in coming down and doing an interview with the designer? And we'll tell you the story. And I said, of course.
Yeah.
And did. And it was a cover story for us in August of 2005. So 11 years ago. And we did a photo shoot with it. And it was quite an experience. The designer sat in the right seat of my Bonanza and did video of his airplane on the photo shoot. So that was kind of neat. And so all these years later, of course, I've stayed, followed the project as they finally in 2006 said that they were going to actually enter the market and start a certification process, and it's taken them all these years, a full decade, to get the thing certified. They finally got it certified in December of 2015 and began delivering airplanes about the same time. And so then I finally got invited down to fly it this week. And it was worth the wait, I got to say. It's a really nice little airplane, light jet, great performance, 420 knots is the max cruise. It'll do that in the kind of mid-30s. But ceiling on it's 43,000 feet. And even up there, it's doing 385, something like that, which is pretty good on very low fuel burns, about 600 pounds an hour. And so it's a nice performer.
What kind of range?
IFR range on it is, as I recall, is about 1,300 nautical miles with NBA reserves. So
that's pretty nice.
Decent legs.
How did it happen from the standpoint? What, did the factory call you up and say, hey, Tom, we're ready for you to go take a ride in one of these puppies and learn how to fly it, or what?
Well, been in touch with them all these years, kept saying, hey, want to fly it? When can we fly it? And kept that relationship going and covered it over the years and, run into the same people, the designer, many times, interviewed him lots of times over the years. And so finally the opportunity presented itself that we could get an airplane available, decent weather, and my schedule aligned that we could make it happen.
Yeah. So you went down with the idea of being a passenger or actually being able to fly this plane and learn and get certified on it, or what?
No, I definitely flew it. Didn't get type rated in it because I was only there for the day, but they have a simulator, a level D simulator, And so I was up in that, or was flying the simulator for a couple hours in advance, and then we went up in the airplane, and I was in the left seat, flew it, you know, had one of their demo pilots in the right seat, but he didn't touch a thing the whole time. And it's a pretty easy airplane to fly. It's got a Garmin G3000 cockpit, so anybody who's flown a G1000 will be pretty familiar with it, although it's much more sophisticated. It's got touchscreen controllers and a lot of automation. In fact, automation is unbelievable. All the lights, for example, are managed automatically. When you roll out on the runway and advance the throttles, the pitot heat comes on, the anti-collision lights come on. At startup, or as soon as you, I think, take the parking brake off, the taxi light comes on. And then most interesting, for night flying, what happens is if you're flying along and it's getting to be toward evening, the system looks at the database for where you are and determines when sunset is, and 30 minutes in advance of that turns the nav lights on for you.
Nice.
And then 30 minutes after sunrise, if you happen to be out flying, it turns the nav lights off for you.
I think we may have found the airplane for Greg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just saying it found it for me.
That's the ultimate autopilot, it sounds like.
It does everything for him, and yeah, that's about right.
I mean, the shorter right. list would be like what it doesn't do. I mean, what do you actually have to do to fly the plane? Throttle up to, and aim,
yeah,
or
basically
what?
Advance, steer? Yeah, feed off the brakes and advance the thrust levers. And,
yeah.
There you go.
Wow. Nice. But what about performance? When you talked about the distance and all that kind of stuff, and you talked about the speed, how did it feel? Did anything kind of jump out at you from that standpoint, from a pilot's perspective, or what?
Well, it's all in all a very nice handling airplane, and flies really well. There's a couple of unusual things about it. One is it's got fly-by-wire steering, so the nose gear steering on the ground is pretty touchy, and they warned me about it. And so, but even with the warning, I was, for the first, you know, couple of turns on the taxiway, I was, people's head were banging against the sidewalls.
oh, Greg would feel at home in that
airplane. Yeah, I knew that was coming. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But you get, by the end of the flight, I was fine. I had that down. I got to say, I made the three best landings, Ed, believe this or not, three best landings I think I've ever made.
He even sounds like me.
No, I believe him.
I don't know what happened, but I thought the first one was a fluke, and even the guy in my demo pilot was just blown away.
Yeah.
First landing in it, he said, you know, usually people, you know, it's okay, survivable, but this one was really nice. I thought, oh well, that was a fluke, you know.
Yeah.
So I did two more, and they were really good too. I impressed myself. So
nice. You just greased it, huh?
Pretty critical of my own landings, but yeah, those are pretty good.
So, I mean, yeah, what is the deal on a plane like that? Do you have to flare like you would in a Cessna, or is it a totally different animal? I mean, because you're doing
it's a different pitch attitude, as I'm sure Keith can relay. It's, you know, on a jet, it's much, much flatter attitude, very minimal flare, and you just basically set a pitch attitude and kind of fly it on. And this thing then has speed brakes, you dump the speed brakes. And you know, and then with anti-skid brakes, you just climb on the brakes and it stops pretty quick.
Hmm. Okay.
Do you have to put the speed brakes out, or does it come out? Do they come out automatically?
They don't come out automatically. That's one thing that you got to do.
The lights come on, but the speed brakes don't.
Speed
brakes
doesn't. Yeah.
Okay.
Well.
Yeah. The other interesting thing was that it doesn't do yet, which surprised me, was that you have to enter your V speeds manually. Look them up. You know, it does the weight, but it doesn't provide the V speeds. You got to look them up on a chart, and then manually enter them, and then it'll populate it up onto your primary flight display, so you got them for reference. And a lot of other airplanes in that category will calculate the V speeds for you based on weight and temperature and, you know, all the user parameters.
Yeah.
So, but they say that's a software change, which I'm sure it is, and that they're working on that. So that'll be fixed. Quickly, my guess is. The other thing, the airplane does not have what's called FIKI, Flight Into Known Icing certification yet. So it is a little bit limited in that you can't go flying through ice, which for a jet, that can be a big deal, depending where you're operating. Mm-hmm. So that's also something that's still in the works, and they're well down the road on that. They just don't have it quite done yet.
Got it. What about capacity? I mean, what is it, a 10-seater, or how big is that thing?
No, this is a small jet. Five in the back and two up front is kind of standard configuration. You can get a configuration where you replace the one seat opposite the door with sort of a galley or a coat rack kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then really only four in the back. Unusual for this category, though, it does have an enclosed lav with a sink. Most airplanes of this size and actually quite a bit bigger tend to have not much of a bathroom, but this one has kind of a real bathroom.
Well, that's
due to the fact that they put the engines up on top.
Yep.
Because they opened up a whole lot more room for them in the fuselage by doing that.
Well, it sounds like that's the plane you should have taken to Cuba. Because
that's right. So you always have your own restroom.
You have your own restroom. You don't have to worry about the toilet seat not being there because you brought your own. You hear what I'm saying?
And so Greg would take the toilet seat out of the airplane and take it with him.
Yeah.
I wouldn't carry it. I'd just put it around my neck.
That's carrying it. That's carrying it.
All right. Well, it sounds like that was a fun little adventure. And you did that down in South Florida, right? Fort Lauderdale or something? Is that where it was?
No, that was Greensboro, North Carolina.
Oh, North Carolina. Yep. All right. Well, he's been doing all kinds of crazy stuff. Honda jets, and then he flew around the world for his like birthday or something last week. We'll get to that next right here on Just Plane Radio. Stay close.
Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Be an explorer in the other two-thirds of your world. Be the buddy who takes the kids in the aquarium instead of just to it. Be adventurous. Be amazed. Be a diver.
For nearly 75 years, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association has been a beacon for those who cherish the freedom to fly. AOPA protects your rights as a pilot by fighting airspace restrictions, fuel taxes, user fees, airport closings, and other issues that threaten your ability to take to the sky. AOPA is on the front lines every day to ensure that general aviation and the interests of its members are promoted and safeguarded. Learn more about how you can become a member at AOPA.org.
Waiting 30 minutes before swimming after eating is a medical myth. However, flying after diving can be a serious issue. I'm Greg the Dive Master, and I'll tell you why next.
This scuba tip is brought to you by DAN, Divers Alert Network. DAN helps divers in need of medical emergency assistance with the DAN hotline and is the most recognized and trusted organization worldwide in the fields of dive safety and emergency services, health, research, and education. Join DAN today by going to DAN.org. DAN, your dive safety association.
Flying after diving is hard to avoid. DCS, also known as the bends, is a risk, but can be managed with forethought and planning. The depth and length of your dive and the rate of ascent back to the surface play a huge role. Quickly ascending to altitude in an airplane can exacerbate the issue. And that's why you should wait a minimum of 12 hours before flying after one dive and 18 hours after multiple dives. Dive into dan.org for more info and to Scuba Radio to get the urge to submerge. Scuba Radio.
With Just Plane Radio, the show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
This test today, it's important.
I got it. I'm going to make you look good up there. Don't worry, okay? Now let's get these pants off and fly some planes.
I'm learning to fly around the clouds.
This is Just Plane Radio. Greg, a co-pilot. That's me along with Captain Ed and Captain Keith. And Tom Haynes from AOPA is with us right now. He's just been flying all over in Honda jets to Cuba, and he even flew around the pyramids last week. Now, how did this come about there, Tom? Was this part of your, birthday adventure? Because I know you celebrated a big birthday last week, so happy birthday to you.
Well,
happy
thank
birthday.
You.
But was
thank
that part of the whole thing? You said, hey, okay, I'm going to fly around the world as part of my birthday, or was this just something that kind of coincided with some work, things
I may have said that, but that's not exactly what happened.
Okay, so. What do you mean? Explain.
Yeah, no, see, a friend of mine is flying his airplane around the world. Adrian Eichhorn's flying his Bonanza around the world. And he left from Manassas, Virginia in early April, or actually, yeah, about second weekend of April, I guess it was, and went to across to Canada, then to the Azores, and then to northern France at Normandy, Deville, France. And so I flew to Paris on the airlines and then drove up to Deville and met him there because both of us have always wanted to visit Omaha Beach and go to the American Cemetery there on Normandy.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that. And then the next day, we actually did a photo mission over the beach and the cemetery, which was really moving. Adrian is a ex-Army guy, Lieutenant Colonel, former attorney or Lieutenant Colonel in the Army. And so, you know, real connection to those guys. And he was Army Corps of Engineers, as a matter of fact. So a lot of connection with that. And it was really moving. We had a good time. But then I flew with him to Friedrichshafen in southern Germany for the big Aero show. It's like the biggest general aviation show in Europe. And so we spent a few days there. His airplane was on display. Jeppesen is one of his sponsors. And so they had a space there where they wanted his airplane to be shown.
Yeah, I saw the segment on AOPA Live that you guys recorded from the site there. So I saw that.
Yep.
That was pretty cool. So you hung out in Germany, did the air show, compared notes with some of your German flying friends. But then how did you end up in Egypt? Because next thing I know, I get a text from Tom. I'm like, hey, we're doing the show this week. You want to come on? And he goes, well, I don't know. What does this tell you? And he texted me a picture of him with his finger on the top point of a pyramid in the background or something. He did like perspective type of shot. And I was like, okay, I guess he's off this week.
You know, so. I thought it meant that Greg's dead.
Oh, very funny. As I celebrate a birthday in 2 days. You bastard! No, anyways, yeah. I mean, so what was the story? How'd you end up in Egypt? Were you flying there too?
Yeah, well, Adrian was continuing around the world, so I did the next couple of legs with him.
Yeah.
We went to Greece, Thessaloniki, Greece, which is in northern Greece. Spent a couple of days there, and were hosted by AOPA Greece there and a flying club. And then we flew down to Santorini, which is an island just north of Crete, and spent just 1 day there kind of exploring that island. And then we launched from there and went to Egypt. And we cleared customs at an airport on the north coast of Egypt. And then we flew from there to an airport near Cairo and were met there by a flying club and a fellow named Eddie Gold, who is kind of a handler for general aviation pilots flying long distances and around the world and that sort of thing, and is working with Adrian on that. So anyhow, he hosted us there. We went to the pyramids and rode a camel, which was also on Adrian's bucket list, and had a good time there. That was a pretty interesting place. But the flying there was just really challenging. It's, you know, we've got it so good in this country. I thought Europe was bad, but Egypt was a mess. And so we spent a couple days there. Then I airlined at home, and Adrian continued on. He went down to Aswan in southern or sort of south central Egypt, then to the United Arab Emirates, then to Sri Lanka, and to, I guess after that was maybe Guam, or no, the Philippines, Manila, then to Guam, which is where he is as we record this, and he's going to be leaving for a couple of the islands in the Pacific, and then on to Hawaii, and then Long Beach, and if all goes right, he's going to be at the AOPA fly-in in Beaufort, North Carolina on May 21st, and tell the crowds there about his experience of flying his single-engine airplane around the world.
Very cool. Nice. Yeah.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Now, why was the flying, you mentioned Egypt, was a nightmare? What? Was it like flying, you know, in the movie of The Mummy where you're avoiding sandstorms or something, or what?
Exactly. How did you know?
Because I've seen the movie. Hello.
We actually flew through a sandstorm. You know, I had the leg. I had the leg from northern Egypt, where we cleared customs, to Cairo, and we took off and we're climbing out, and all of a sudden we're in a cloud, so we think, and then we realize, no, this is dust.
Oh,
we're
wow.
flying in sand.
Hmm.
And then as we got close to the airport where we were supposed to land, it kind of cleared up, and they had told us as we were en route, they said, look, the airport you're going to, which is a military base, as they pretty much all are in Egypt, is closing at 1300. And we're like, we looked at watches and we're like, no. We get there at 1300. And they're like, that's closing at 1300. And so we like, you know, beat feet, asking for shortcuts, speed up, trying to get there ahead of 1300. And they were at 11,000 feet. They won't let us descend. We finally got the airport in sight. And, you know, I'm like pleading, you know, get us lower. We need to be lower. Finally, we get lower. Ultimately, we land at like 2 minutes till 1300 when they're closing the airport. Or otherwise, I have no idea where we would have went, because it's not like here where you can just, you know, pick an airport anywhere and go. You have to have landing permits and flight plans.
You got a name drop. Stuff. You got to like, hey, this is Indiana Jones. Hello. Come on. Travel all the way from the States. Yes, I hate snakes, but I want to land now.
But the adventure continues, because after we get on the ground and we're taxiing over to a hangar for this flying club who's hosting us, and we look across the airport, and it's by now it's good visibility, but all of a sudden across the airport it's like, you know, 0-0 practically. And within about 5 minutes, we're just engulfed by this sandstorm.
Wow.
And so the airplane is getting pummeled with sand. We duck into the hangar and kind of wait it out, and about 45 minutes later, it kind of passes, but we did get caught up, just like in the movie, in a sandstorm.
Just adds to the adventure.
That's right.
Cool stuff indeed, and hey, we'll end it at that for this week. Till next time, remember, there's no better high
than learning to fly.
To fly.
Just Plain Radio is brought to you by JustPlainRadio.com.
I say we take off and nuke the entire site from orbit.
Your aviation resource on the information super skyway.
It's the only way to be sure.
Just Plain Radio is a production of Overboard Entertainment Incorporated.
But just plain wrong.
Remember, you can listen live or to archives of past shows worldwide over the internet at JustPlainRadio.com.
I'm going to leave my people up to the radio tower.
So tell a friend and take off every week with Just Plain Radio.
And I'm going to make a call.
The show devoted exclusively to flying and the aviation lifestyle.
Listen up, everybody. I have some news.
The opinions you just heard on Just Plain Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests.
We are screwed.
They are not necessarily those of any station or network, its management, or advertisers.
A little too far. Cross the line.
There are many factors to consider before learning to fly.
What is your problem?
So make sure you do your own research and get the proper instruction before your exploration into aviation.
Thank you very much, sir.
Have any questions or comments? Feel free to do so via the web at JustPlainRadio.com.